Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 2 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick, Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jake Lewitt of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
I'm back. Hello. I'm still here.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And we actually will get some dialogue today, so we'll have to wait and see.
We will. And more music.
Yes. Well, it's the same music, but yeah.
Yeah.
More of the same. More of the same music. How's that?
Sure.
So, minute two begins with more shots of New York City at presumably dawn and ends with Cobb starting to give out assignments. I mean, yesterday we talk just about the opening credits. There wasn't really much going on the screen. I guess the most important thing that was going on was the music, which continues into this minute. And then we continue to get shots of the New York skyline. We can see the Empire State Building. I'm assuming that you're probably in the same boat as I am. No pun intended, but I'll explain in a second why. But I can't recognize any of the buildings in the New York skyline besides I've only ever been able to recognize the Empire State Building and the World Trade Center. And this movie, spoiler alert, doesn't give us any World Trade Center, which is somewhat ironic, I guess you could say.
It's unusual. I was looking out for it. I'm not great at the New York skyline either. Well, there is in like 8 seconds in, you can see one of the Twin Towers
right
on the far right of the screen. So you do get a little bit of
it. You get a little bit of it. A little bit. But what I actually wanted to discuss is, you know, we see in front of the New York skyline, we see a boat. Do you have any idea what that boat is?
I think I would have assumed the Staten Island Ferry, but I'm not sure if it's going the right way or if it's in the right
place.
And
you were correct. First of all, you're correct. Okay. It is the Staten Island Ferry, and it doesn't matter if it's going the right way or not, because the Staten Island Ferry goes both ways. So
I didn't know if it was like looking at the water from the right direction as well.
No, I couldn't tell you if that ferry is going towards New York or going towards Staten Island. That I couldn't tell you.
Sure. Okay.
Correct. Now, do you know how much it costs to travel on the Staten Island ferry?
No, because when I went on it, I was a child and did not pay. I had parents.
Well, if you went on it today, you also wouldn't have to pay because it is free.
Way.
Okay, it is approximately a 25-minute trip between Manhattan and Staten Island. The ferry operates 5 days a week, and you basically have boats leaving every 15 to 20 minutes during peak hours and every 30 minutes the rest of the time. It is the only direct mass transit connection between Staten Island and Manhattan. They used to charge a very low fare, but since 1997, it's been free. Up until then, people started complaining that the prices were going up, and then in the end, they decided to start paying for it. You know, I guess people's taxes are paying for it.
So during this film, they had to pay.
Correct. That is correct. The people that are on that are being filmed that we can't see at dawn. Yes, they had to pay. Do you have any clue as to what year they started the ferry service?
Sometime after people started living in New York and before 1995.
Okay, you are correct. That would be 1870.
I knew it.
Yes. There's a whole history of it. I'm not going to go into the whole history about that they merged with other companies and stuff like that. But bottom line is that it became very popular that people were used to travel between Staten Island and Manhattan, and it eventually reached a point where people weren't using it as much because most people like their cars, I guess. How many people do you think rode the Staten Island Ferry in 2022?
Oh, okay. How many people can fit on the ferry? What's the ferry capacity?
I absolutely know.
Sure. Let's
Because it depends on what boat they have. They have numerous boats, so I couldn't tell you exactly then how many people are on each of them.
Let's guess the ferry can take 100 people, and it goes back. He says it goes back and forth. I don't know. I guess let's say 350. No, 500,000, or 5 million.
there's a little bit of discrepancy between those two numbers. Well, you're closer with the second, and you're not close at all. There were 13 million people who rode the Staten Island ferry in 2022.
Okay.
It is the busiest ferry route in the U.S. and is the world's busiest passenger-only ferry system.
Okay.
So, you know, it's very popular with tourists and visitors because you get a free trip and you can, watch you get to look at the skyline through the whole thing. The two main ships that they use nowadays are the John F. Kennedy and the Spirit of America. But I didn't look up the capacity of either. So I'm sorry that I wasn't able to give you that information because, you know, I know that, maybe you would have been able to give a better educated guess.
Each boat carries 4,427 passengers, and I guessed 100. So that could be why my figure was out a little bit. I should have, like, it's the ferry from Spider-Man Homecoming. I should have, that's bigger than 100 people. Yeah, that's on me.
Okay, that's fine. It's all for fun.
I've let you down, Rob. I'm sorry.
You know, I'll still let you come back for the rest of the week, and maybe for the first week of next season, along with the finale, obviously. We'll have to wait and see. we continue with watching the skyline. We get to see the North Tower, which is the one that has the antenna on top. We also get to see like a cruise ship, which is very interesting that they have a cruise ship in the Hudson River there. But oh well. Then we get a shot of the Empire State Building, which whenever I see that, I'm reminded of two movies. Any clue what two movies I think of? That's one of them.
The remake of King Kong.
No. The remake of King Kong was on the 1976 one was the
2005 was back at Empire State Building.
Yes. Okay, fine. So what are the three movies I'm gonna that I think?
Guess. Is it Sleepless in Seattle? No, it's the other one. Is it? It's Sleepless in Seattle. Okay, I get that one and the other one's confused because I haven't read.
The other one, which is the other one. Hopefully, you're not thinking of when Harry.
The other Tom Hanks Meg Ryan one. That's not Joe versus the Volcano.
I got
confused because I've not really seen either of them.
Really? I figured you'd be more of a fan of.
I would be. I don't know. I don't remember them.
Okay. Well, we did talk yesterday about you not rewatching movies, so that makes
sense. Who has the time?
Are you rarely rewatching movies? There's always time to watch movies.
I have a job. Right, so I can't watch films at my
I have less time to do it than I used to, but I still find the time to do it, yes. Sure. Then we actually get a shot of the street of New York, the streets in the city. And we can actually even read the street name of where what they're showing us. Were you able to see what
it's
called?
It's blurry on the version I have. I couldn't make it out.
You didn't use the version that I sent you?
It's blurry.
It's not blurry, blurry on mine. That's weird. Okay, it's New Street.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so New Street is... It was called New Street because it was the first street that they added after the British took over the city in 1664.
It's a frankly terrible road name.
And
you just never heard anything.
Yeah, it's completely terrible.
It's not going to be.
Correct. But it's still, after, 450 years, or 460 years, it's still considered a new street.
If it's the first one, it's the oldest street. It's the least... people need to think better when they name streets.
That's right. But this is on the British. You can't even blame Americans.
I blame the past. People of the past. Don't care where they're from. It's their fault. Everything.
If you'd like to blame the past, you can do that. So New Street actually is going to play out later in the movie, because what famous buildings appear on in this area?
The banks?
You have any idea? So we have the Bank of New York, the New York Stock Exchange, the Old Standard Oil Building. I mean, I always wonder, or now I wonder, since I know where this is, you know, if this was done on purpose or it was just, you know, they were trying to give a static shot of something in New York, and they ended up giving us, a shot of something that is going to be connected to what's going on later.
Preceded by the best line delivery of the film, of that kid going, "It's Christmas, you could steal City Hall."
That's right. Well, that's the Christmas
film that's not set at a holiday, an annual holiday.
What holiday was the Great Escape set at?
That's a twofer.
That's true. Well, in the summer, but they're also celebrating Christmas.
It's shown at Christmas, therefore it's a Christmas. Die Hard with a Vengeance, it's just...
So right. Well, in England. Yes. Yeah, the truth is we actually never find out when this takes place in the summer. You know, like Die Hard 4.0, we know is right. July 4th.
In this minute, I'm just going to head a little bit, but there's a back-to-school sale on Bonwit Tower.
Yes, there is.
But schools...
I was going to talk about that.
But later in the film, the kids are back at school. Spoiler alert. Therefore, that gives us a very narrow window of back-to-school sales still being on whilst at school. This has got to be like first week of school, which I think my research would say is like the second week of August.
That would be September.
I thought about that.
U.S. schools are off for July and August.
When the back to school date was in New York in 1995, and it gave me the first week of August. So,
damn it. No.
Well, then this is all rubbish, though, because it's.
Yeah, that is a discrepancy. My assumption is that this is late June. That's the best guess.
This is a very early back to school sale. Then this is
It could be that it's. It could be that when they were filming it, they filmed it
crushing when you first go onto your summer break and the schools immediately start doing back to school sale as that just constant reminder that this is temporary, and your enjoyment will end soon and you'll be back at school.
Right. Yeah. There is a discrepancy here. There's no question about this.
God damn it. Oh well.
Yeah. I mean, I don't recall. We just know that it's a hot summer movie. Hot time. That's it.
Summer in the city.
You know, that's right. But we never find out an exact date. Maybe later on, as we're going through this, we'll find things that specify the date. But as you said, there's still
a lot of kids to be at a summer school or like a detention, if that's what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, they're definitely not in summer school. I don't think that they're in summer school. I wouldn't think so. That's all I can say about that. And we get to see a hot dog stand, which we talked about during when Harry met Sally. And then we see just a bunch of other stands. We have someone with a fruit stand. You know, selling apples and grapes. I remember how much Jay loves grapes. Especially the guy at the office.
He doesn't work. Walks
around anymore with them in his pocket.
He's moved on. Said more sinister than needs to be.
There's also someone selling.
He's no longer with us.
Apparently. He's no longer with us in the company, or he's no longer with us in this plane of existence.
He's fine. No, I didn't.
He was fired.
No,
did you fire him?
No, he's fine. I saw him.
He's fine.
He's alive. Sometimes.
Is he still offering autographs in his pocket? You can say, hey, you keep getting mentioned on my on podcasts. Okay. We see someone selling coffee.
Superb.
Coffee and pastries. Superb. Then we get another shot, which is a little strange because it doesn't look like it fits in with the rest of the area that they're showing. So maybe they're just showing another area of downtown New York. And we see a grocery store owner washing the curb with a hose. And we see on top that it's called the Huang Deli and Grocery.
That must exist somewhere.
And
No,
I couldn't find it. I looked and I couldn't find it. It doesn't mean that it's not a. Let's put it this way: looking at this, the way that this is filmed, my assumption is they just.
Well, that means the laundromat next to it says Tompkins Park. Is that Tompkins the name Park. Of the laundromat, or is that like
that's
the
right. area Tompkins that Park is it? Laundromat.
Okay, there we are.
That's the area. So a laundromat. Do you know other names for a laundromat?
Nope.
Okay. Anything else? A self-service laundry, a coin laundry, or a coin wash. So it's a facility where clothes are washed and dried without much personalized professional help. In England, they're known as laundrettes. And in the U.S., they're known as laundromats. And in certain places, like Texas, it's called a washateria.
I refuse.
Yes. That's just hilarious that they would actually, that they would call it a washateria. Don't know. What can I tell you? Have you ever used a laundromat?
I can understand if it was like a laundrette and like a cafeteria combined, that would make sense. But just a standalone laundrette to be called a washateria? No. I'm sorry, no. No, I've never used one. I've never needed to. I have a washing machine in my house.
Okay, well, the reason that in Texas it's called a washateria is that the very first laundromat in the U.S., which was opened in... You want to give a guess of what year?
1987.
1934.
Sure. Okay.
In Fort Worth, Texas, and the name of it was Washateria. That's what they named the laundromat. So I guess it's one of those things that, the brand name, has become the generic name, like with, Kleenex and there's a whole bunch of those things. I'm trying to remember. I can't think of any other examples right now. Things that you refer to them, even though I know in Texas they do this a lot because apparently any soft drink in Texas is known as Coke. Even if you want like a Sprite, it's known as Coke.
You could have the infinitely better Pepsi. Like, why would you? It feels like a mistake. Why would you be ordering an inferior thing?
Well, you could be ordering Pepsi, but you just ask for a Coke.
Like, why would you want? Why would you? This is infuriating. You could there's such a risk you can get something terrible.
Well, apparently you have to.
Richard is listening to this.
Yeah, that's right. Richard's listening. No, but Richard's really from California, so he probably makes fun of these things also.
But he'd be fine getting a Coke because he likes Coke. I guess his risk is I'd like a Coke and receive a Pepsi. Oh,
maybe. Fury again, you got Jim. Up in it. You got Jim. Also, is in Texas, so maybe Jim.
I don't know Jim. Soda habits. Sorry.
I'll have to ask him. When you order a Coke, what do they give you?
Are you okay with that?
Exactly. There's probably a specialized way to ask for what you really want.
I've just been looking at all of the laundromats in the Tompkins Park area, and none of them seem like this one. So I don't either exist anymore, or I just haven't.
Right. Again, it's 29 years. So the assumption is that that laundromat is still not around. Do you know approximately how many laundromats there still are as of 2020 in the U.S.?
I wouldn't even know where to start guessing that. In the entirety of America, no. 20,000?
11,000.
closer than I thought I was going to be.
Yeah, because I guess most people, have their own washing machines. So, don't know. All right, and then did you notice the way the guy is washing the curb?
Angry.
He like jerks his hand back and forth.
Angry at the pavement.
Yes. Yes. Is he angry at the pavement, or is he angry at what? Like maybe someone left some dog poop there or something like that, and that's what he's angry about. That this is what I have to do first thing in the morning when I open up my shop.
It's either that or like the he's using a hose pipe. Those things can be infuriating sometimes. So he's kind of he jerks the hose behind him a little bit. So I thought maybe it's getting caught on something. So he's just trying to unhitch it from wherever it's caught on. But either way, he's not having a good day. And being in New York today, his day is not going to get better. His day is going to get worse. This is a bad day for everyone.
That's right. And did you notice that there's a homeless man on the side there?
I did not. I still.
So he's washing the curb, and then if you look to his left, which is to our right, there's a homeless person sitting down in front of the next shop over, whatever it may be, since it hasn't opened yet.
Yeah.
Right. Then we get a shot of the jewelry district, where we see a whole bunch of people, putting out jewelry displays.
Yep.
Along with a couple of Hasidim who are known as the Jewish diamond dealers in New York. So they give us that quick little shot of that. Then we're back on a very crowded New York street. So it's nice the way that. They quickly have the time move forward, this early morning. Here we are just, a minute and 25 seconds into the movie, and we started off at dawn, and then it's already jumped to the point where, this is probably like 8:30 or something like that. People are on their way to work.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, although judging by everyone's attire, not a lot of kind of business clothes going on. There's a lot of like just kind of casual. This may have been filmed on a Saturday, who knows? But then, in New York, people seem to work.
Probably not, because I see one of the Hasidim, walking with everyone else. So it probably didn't happen on Saturday. Yes. That would be my guess. Maybe a Sunday. I don't know. They give us the idea that there's a lot of hustle and bustle going on here.
Yes. This is a real, it's just another day. This is it gives a real sense of this is where we are, this is what's going on, everyone's busy, everyone's happening.
Yeah, there's people are stuck in traffic.
These are the people this day is going to happen.
That's right. We even get a shot. There's like a, I guess you can call it a nudie bar that seems to be open at this hour, which is
it's
a little strange.
The city that never sleeps.
Okay.
Always open.
Apparently. No, but the city that never sleeps talks about that everything's open all night. Not 8:30 in the morning where you have neon signs proclaiming, something World Center, live nude, XXX. I don't know.
I've yet to spot it in a minute, so I'm just going to take your word for it.
If you check it second 27, you can see it. It's like right in the middle of the shot, all the way in the back.
The kind of neon sign. Okay, sure.
Neon sign. There's an ambulance and a mail truck.
That's
in front of
deeper in the frame than I was looking.
Okay. You have to look everywhere, Jay. Okay. Come on. And again, we see people coming out of the subway, and then we get a shot of what you talked about earlier, Bonwit's back to school sale, which makes absolutely no sense here.
Sure.
And it's Bonwit Teller, which is a department store that opened in New York in 1895, and just 5 years after this movie, they went bankrupt.
The store blew up. It makes sense. They couldn't trade. It blows up. There's no coming back from this.
The fact that they don't have a shop really there sort of says something about that also. I mean, they filed for bankruptcy in 1989. They had stores in a whole bunch of different cities, Cincinnati, Columbia, Boston, Buffalo, you know, so some of the stores were bought up by other companies, but they no longer had anything in New York City at this point. So it's interesting that they chose to use that here, which means it's not a real sign, and therefore the back to school sale is also very strange. Maybe they just couldn't understand why they wanted to. I don't know.
Maybe.
Okay. I mean, it was Lotus. One second. It was located on 57th Street, and it actually became part of Trump Tower's indoor mall at the time. Again, we're not talking politics. Just mentioning
maybe
it as a business.
Had a bunch of. Yeah, maybe. Well, and he comes up later in the film. Maybe Bonwitz had a bunch of back to school sale signs left over. They could sell off for cheap. Like they wanted to. I guess it's just the one sign. I don't know. It makes no sense. I'm glad they blew it up.
Okay, it's actually a store that has appeared in many movies. Basically, this store had been out of business already for 5 years. When they used it here. There's a movie from the 1950s with Katharine Hepburn that features Bonwitz. There's a movie called Desk Set. I've never seen it. Breakfast at Tiffany's. Breakfast at Tiffany's with Audrey Hepburn features Bonwitz. Shout out to Tierney. Of the MASH Minute. So there was an episode of MASH that had Klinger making a joke about Bonwick Teller. In the sequel to Love Story, which is known as Oliver Story in 1978, Ryan O'Neill and Candace Bergen, Candace Bergen actually plays the daughter and the heiress of the Bonwick Teller fortune. Which I guess 12 years later, it wouldn't have been such a good thing to play. In Rocky II, Rocky Balboa stops off at their store in Philadelphia in order to, he buys an expensive jacket there and a fur coat for Adrian. Then you have this movie, which, as we said, they resurrected the store for this opening shot of the movie. Mad Men features Bonwit Teller, the TV show. So, yeah, there's a lot of references over the years. But again, it's just very interesting. And when we talk a little bit about the script, I'll sort of explain why they possibly changed it to Bonwit Teller. Because, in this, the original script, it's not Bonwit Teller. And then we get a shot of, you know, they give us a further shot of the store. And, you know, we see... the people walking by, seeing the various cars going by, and then at second 36 of the movie, there is an explosion, and we see that the store itself basically blows up, and then there's a truck that goes flying. Did you take a look at what's written on the truck? Was van?
I did not.
It says Atlantic Courier.
Okay.
Do you get the in joke?
Is that in Die Hard 2? The phones had Atlantic on them. No,
nope.
What's the in joke?
In Die Hard 1, the name on the side of the truck that they come into the Nakatomi building in is Pacific Courier.
I see, of course.
So here they use Atlantic Courier. Speed also uses, I think, Pacific Courier. I think that's the plane that gets blown up at the end by the bus as it's going around LAX. So yeah, this explosion does a lot of damage to the now defunct Bonwit Teller, which gives you more reason for them to close the store down, because as I think Al Powell said, they're going to need a load of new screen doors. So yeah, I think you're going to have that problem here also.
Yes.
I would think, and as would happen. The traffic stops and people start getting out of their cars to try and figure out what's going on.
Yeah. People running across from the other side of the street.
some of them running towards it to you know, maybe they're medical workers. They want to go help people. I don't know. Yeah.
That's what you do. You go help.
Yeah. And then we get a long shot, which shows just the smoke on the New York street.
Love the silence.
Yes.
I just said, like, because we've had so much hustle and bustle and this loud music playing, and then just, you know, the day has been interrupted.
Yeah, and I love the way how they just stop the music mid playing as soon as that happens. You know, you have the explosion and the music just stops.
Maybe it's diegetic. Maybe the music was coming from the store and now it's blown up.
And so okay, my guess would be that they're playing like musical chairs. You know, that when the music stops, the bomb goes off. I don't know.
That's not the version that I played of that game.
Well, so you live in a safer country. I don't know. okay. I don't know. No, that's never happened here either. Not that I'm aware of. But, yeah. So, at this point, we now see the hustle and bustle of what looks like a police precinct. And we only hear a voice. We don't see anyone talking at the beginning. And we hear, Alan, Bomb Squad, Special Services, State Police and the FBI. Lieutenant Jurgensen, and that's basically all we hear. You know, right as the minute is about to end, we see his face. You know, we have 1 second left before we see his face, and the actor playing Arthur Cobb is called Larry Brigman. Are you familiar with anything that he's done besides this movie?
No, this is a thing I have with most of the police characters from Die with Vengeance. Is I know them from this.
Okay, well, as we go through the characters, maybe something will jump up at you. Not with him, okay? He is an actor who was born on December 21st, 1938. He only has 22 IMDb credits, but he was on the soap opera As the World Turns, which I'm assuming you also, like I have not seen, but he was on this soap opera for 35 years. He was in 1,432 episodes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's impressive. Yes,
that is.
That's a steady paycheck.
He was on this TV show, on this soap opera from 1969 through 2010. He was nominated for 8 daytime Emmys for it, and he won Best Actor in 1984 and 1987. So, I mean, I've seen this movie dozens of times, and I've never thought about the fact that, you know, what else has he been in? Because he just, as you said, he never thought about what other movies he's been in or anything like that. And the fact that he played a character on a soap opera for so many years, and then they give him the job here of being, you know, chief police inspector, it says a lot about the range he must have that he was able to do this.
Yeah, it does. Yes. And he's good in Die with a Vengeance, but I feel like where this film differs from the first Die Hard, it in many ways, but one of the main ways is it doesn't give this level of supporting actor enough to kind of pop with, I think. You get a couple of the kind of supporting guys. Charlie does not come up in my scenes, so I'm going to talk about a little bit. I love Charlie, the bomb guy. The truck driver, Jerry, basically John Ratzenberger, he shines in his scene, but no one else really kind of gets the chance to pop. Whereas in Die Hard, everyone does. Everyone has these like memorable scenes. And that to me is one of the main reasons this isn't
as revered,
I think. It's right. The Bruce Willis, Jeremy Irons.
Right. Sam this one show. Wanted to focus much more, you know, on the two of them. You know, it which again we talked a little bit about this yesterday. It is somewhat reminiscent of a buddy buddy cop movie from that perspective. You know, like Lethal Weapon, but it's just the beginning of the connection between the two characters. So they have to throughout the course of the movie, they have to study and learn who the other person is in order to figure out how to react. And what needs to be done. Okay.
Makes sense.
And we'll talk more about this stuff tomorrow. So, Jay, did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
I have two things that I spotted and didn't understand. On the there's a mailbox next to
the okay.
Oh, where's the mailbox? Next to the fruit guy and the coffee and pastry guy is a mailbox which has a sticker on it, and that sticker says the doof is 30. I have tried to Google this. The only thing that comes up is people who have paused the film at this time saying, "What the
heck?" I don't know either, and I didn't even notice it. You see, there you go. No one knows. I didn't even pay attention to that.
No. I've Googled doof as to what it could mean.
No, doof is usually like a doof.
Like the doof warrior from Mad Max Fury Road. If you like. Well, so it can mean an idiot or a dumb person. But in Australia, it's an outdoor dance party is a doof. So the doof, that's where the term doof warrior comes from in Fury Road is if you're having like a party in the desert, it's a doof. But in the UK, the term doof refers to, back to soap operas, the soap opera EastEnders ends with the music at the end of an episode of EastEnders, a show I used to watch with my parents but haven't done for a long time. You'd always have like a cliffhanger in every episode, and the music would go doof, 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 doof. And that's the doofs is at the end of EastEnders. So it doesn't help with this, but I just had to point out the doof is 30. What does it mean? No one knows. And I have tried not to.
I mean, I just did a quick search and I see something that says, is the doof and really 47? But
unhelpful.
Not at all.
In the lyrics to the...
Especially since it's been 29 years, so the doof should be 59 at this point, yeah. If anything.
Also, something that doesn't seem to have an answer to it. In the lyrics to the song that we hear before they cut out is the phrase... till I'm wheezing like a bus stop. And I I've Googled and no one seems to understand what it means to be wheezing like a bus stop. A bus stop, typically something.
Hey, if it gets you to the number one on the Billboard, sure. Then it doesn't really matter, does it?
I just had to point out these two things that I don't have answers to. So now audio listeners can also not have an answer to these questions. But if you have an answer, contact Rob, contact me, please.
Please let us know. Yes, those are two very interesting things to think about. Okay, so today we're going to continue with the script, and there's a lot going on in the script that is not in the movie at all. So it starts off in the New York Police Department Midtown Precinct early morning. The detective's bullpen is deserted. Shafts of sunlight pass through Venetian blinds onto a cup of coffee on the desk. The camera picking up objects, photos, a detective shield belonging to Detective John McClane. Suddenly the door bangs open. Cops and detectives enter for a new day, laughing, talking. Yankees and Mets. The room is packed with uniformed cops and detectives, incessant chatter and tapping word processors. In the corner, a group of New York City Police Department detectives are going over case files, drinking coffee. Ricky Walsh sits with his feet propped on the desk, looking at a clipboard. Walsh, I get an eyewitness on a 211 in Bed-Stuy. Hispanic male, mid-20s with a red windbreaker. Detective 2, I'll take it, Ricky. Walsh, making a note on his clipboard. Sold to the man in the seersucker suit. A windowed office down the hall, continuous. Chief of Detective Arthur Cobb is talking to Detective Joe Lambert. Cobb says, overreacting? Really? Larry Down and O'Neill says he closes the place every night. Lambert, he doesn't have a drinking problem. I'm not saying he does, but he won't take a physical. He told the shrink downtown to, I'm putting this in her words, have intercourse with herself. What's eating him? Man's inhumanity to man? The plight of Tibet? The Mets outfield. Arthur, John's not had the best year. I don't want a testimonial. His caseload's down. There's talk of a leave of absence. I've got to see some change. You and Ricky have known him since kindergarten. You talk to him. They stare at each other. Then in it switches to the bathroom of the precinct. A long functional John with a thousand toilets and sinks. Two uniformed rookie cops are taking a piss. Whispering. In the background, we hear a roaring faucet. You ever see him? Yeah, a couple times at the range. What's he look like? One of the guys downtown told me he sleeps here half the time. McClane. Only a quarter of the time, fellas. The cops startled look over at John McClane at the sink, spitting out toothpaste. McClane is 40. His hair is flecked with gray. He stands upright and turns off the faucet, wipes his mouth on his sleeve. McClane walks past the rookie cops with his toothbrush and toothpaste. Good views, bad room service. McClane walks out the door past the stunned cops. And now a shot in Bloomingdale's. It's 9 a.m. and already humid as a locker room. On 3rd Avenue, shoppers cross through the doors of Bloomingdale's, eager to take advantage of cosmetics and lingerie sale. On the first floor, ladies walk the aisles, exchanging cool smiles with swiftly perfumed salesmen who display their scents. At the counter, a lady shopper applies eyeshadow. She bends forward, looking in a small mirror on the counter. "Hmm, this one's nice." The salesgirl on the other side of the counter agrees. "Yes, I like that one." The lady shopper bends closer to the mirror. Her shoe hits something. She looks down. A Samsonite briefcase sits at her feet. "Oh, dear. Someone left their briefcase." "Happens all the time. I'll take it." The lady shopper picks up the briefcase and hands it across the counter to the salesgirl. The salesgirl examines the briefcase. "It's ticking. Do you hear that?" "Yes. Yes, I do." They each look at the briefcase. They look at each other. A huge blast, an eruption of flames. The place blows to pieces, flying glass and metal. The jewelry counter becomes airborne. It is over suddenly. Ceiling sprinklers douse the carnage. Corpses amidst the wreckage. Midtown Precinct. Once again, Washington detectives continue their morning routine. "I got a theft of 10 industrial dump trucks on Staten Island." McLean says, "Insurance fraud." Everyone turns to McLean. He's at his desk, knocking his Madigan necktie, lighting another cigarette. By now, the trucks are in California, and the contractor's collecting theft insurance, which he'll split with the thieves. They've run that scam in Jersey for years. "I'll take it, Ricky." Waltz makes a notation. "Sold to the man who bathes with high karate, Old Spice." I did detect a fresher bouquet. Joe Lambert walks up, humming the theme from Jeopardy. He has dollar bills in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. He shoves the coffee in McLean's hand. Category, New York trivia. Detective Waltz, this mediocre center field replaced the legendary Joe DiMaggio. Walsh, who is Carl Bennett? Boink. Lou Boudreaux pockets the $5 bill. Detective McLean for $10. This is the biggest engineering job in the U.S. since the Hoover Dam. No idea, Alex. What is the New York City aqueduct from the Catskill Mountains to the Isle of Manhattan? They ever going to finish that thing? Suddenly, the bullpen's emergency bell clang. Everyone whips their necks around. Oh, f***. During this, Lambert turns to McLean. "Let's talk later, okay? About what? Life. Yours in particular." McLean and Lambert lock eyes. The uniformed cop enters the building, shouting, "Somebody just blew up Bloomingdale's." Everyone stares at each other. So, again, great exposition, but completely unnecessary, even though it does give us more of an idea as to who these characters are.
It establishes the aqueduct, I guess, which was...
Yes, I like the fact that they mentioned that, yes.
Yeah, me too. I like the sequence of the aqueduct later in the film, but it doesn't kind of fit with everything else. It's just like, where the aqueduct? And then you could like take that bit out, I guess.
Right. Yeah. But having this earlier wouldn't have made that scene any better. It wouldn't have been like, oh, wait, that's the aqueduct that they talked about. You know, it's Chekhov's aqueduct.
Yeah. Right? But I mean, you have, it comes up later in this week, but it's mentioned in the script there, but they talk about the dump trucks
being stolen. The insurance fraud.
Yeah.
The insurance fraud. Yeah.
And like, that's something I'd not really picked up on in prior watches, how much is established. I'd never, spoilers for later in this season that I think it's talk about, the bomb that goes off in the aqueduct, I'd never picked up on that one. That was the bomb from the fountain. I just get oblivious to that every time I've seen this before.
There you go. Yeah. It's always nice to rewatch things a minute at a time so you pick up on these things. You know. All right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Trilogy Tuesday, where my guests will give their top three or top five, sorry, where my guests will give their top five trilogies that have been made. So obviously I'm going to be a little flexible here. You know, people can use things that possibly have more than three movies if you only count the trilogy. You know, like for instance, Indiana Jones, I would count as a trilogy. But we'll see what Jay gives us.
I had thought about doing that. I don't want to do that. I want to do just trilogies. Just because, okay. I think when we were going back and forth as to what your features could be, I think I pitched best third film in a franchise. But you went trilogies instead. Because I don't consider Die Hard a trilogy. The first three are the best ones, sure. But a franchise of five films is a different thing to it. Whatever. So I'm doing
trilogies. Yes.
Kind of doing trilogies. We'll see. So my number five is Back to the Future. A definite trilogy. Can't argue with that. There's only three of them. And it's excellent. I love it. Back to the Future Minute. Shout out to those guys. It's an excellent show as well. My number four, I'm doing the Danny Ocean trilogy. The Ocean's 11, 12, 13. Danny Ocean, not in Ocean's 8, therefore not part of this trilogy.
Right.
It is the trilogy. Ocean's 11 is, in my opinion, a perfect film. I love that film so very much. It's glorious. 12 and 13 are fun. I get why people don't like them as much. I still think they're incredibly entertaining, and I will happily watch any of those films any day of the week. Number three, I'm going with Monty Python trilogy. I know there are four Monty Python films, but the first one, and something completely different, is just a compilation of bits from their TV show, so I'm not including that. So Holy Grail, Life of Brian, and Meaning of Life is my Monty Python movie trilogy. I watched them a lot growing up. They were very formative in my teenage years. They mean a lot to me. I haven't watched them in a while. I don't know if they hold up, but I really like them. Number two, I'm going to guess I'm the only person who's going to put this in their top five trilogy list. Any idea what it might be, Rob?
Deep Blue Sea?
Yes, it is.
Aren't you glad they never made that fourth one yet?
No, because then we'd be talking about it on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
No, I know that. No, my point is for this segment,
I don't glad that they didn't come out of it. It would have been in my top five four-part franchises in your next season or two seasons time. I love that some of your listeners are going, wait, Deep Blue Sea trilogy? Yes, there are three Deep Blue Sea films. There is one that came out cinematically. There are two that came out to streaming. The first one is fantastic. The third one is really good. The end of that is, I've enjoyed talking about them all so much, and we'll do so again. They're a lot of fun. Deep Blue Sea, perfect film. And my number one, again, I'm probably giving the person that puts this on their list, the Lego Batman trilogy. The Lego movie, the Lego Batman movie, and the Lego movie, the second part. Lego Batman not in the Ninjago movie, so I don't have to include movies. The Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie are both absolutely perfect. Utter just slices of joy to improve any day. And the second part, the Lego Batman movie, the second part, is fun. It's a lot going on there. I like it as well. But those first two, the Lego Batman movie is like, it's the movie in recent memory that's come the closest to making its way into my Letterboxd top four. It's close. It's very, very close. I love that so very
much. Interesting.
Okay. No one has done the Lego Movie Minute. I'd like to. I don't have time. That's one of those things. I really would like to do that. I know.
Priorities in life, Jay.
Rob, I'm already getting up after 4 hours of sleep to record this podcast. Like, I don't have time. It was not my choice.
That was your choice. We could have started later.
So that's where we are. Lego Movie, Lego Batman trilogy is my number one. No one else will put. I'm gonna say if two of these franchise trilogies appear on someone's list, I'll be happy. I think three of mine are gonna.
My assumption is that Back to the Future will appear numerous times. Mark might add Deep Blue might, because Mark likes to pick obscure stuff anyway.
He talks about it so often, it's not obscure for him anymore. It's
right.
Yeah, exactly. It's obvious.
Okay, but part of the idea here is to get diverse.
You can pick any franchise as long as there's three films in it. It would have been five Die Hard, four Indiana Jones, three Star Wars, two Wallace and Gromit, and one Toy Story. And that's just looking at the first three.
Really? Yes. Wallace and Gromit? You would say Wallace and Gromit is higher than Die Hard? Why is Jurassic Park there?
Because Jurassic Park 3 isn't a very good film. Oh. Jurassic Park is perfect. But also Jurassic Park, I enjoy a great deal. Jurassic Park 3 angers me. I watched it a whole bunch, but it wouldn't make it. That's what keeps it out of the top five. It'll be in the top 10.
Oh, wow.
But that's like just looking at the first three films and all those franchises. That's how I would rate it. Wallace and Gromit is like a British staple. The Wrong Trousers is a perfect piece of cinema. You can watch all three of these in an hour and a half.
Which is the third one?
A close shave.
Okay, I've seen it. I have seen.
They're all great.
All right, great. So, Jay, would you like to tell people once again where they can find Jake Lewis?
Sure. Let's go Deep Blue Sea, because I've just talked about Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, where Mark and I have been through the entire Deep Blue Sea trilogy, scene by scene, 35 episodes for the first one, 10 for the second one, 11 for the third one, because that's how the DVDs broke down. Now looking at Deep Blue Sea adjacent films, that's films directed by Rennie Harlan, which we've almost finished all of his, although the year is out, 2024, is the year of Rennie Harlan. He is releasing and directing four films this year. We've just done an episode.
Wow.
Yeah, we've released an episode on The Bricklayer, a fun film where Aaron Eckhart plays an assassin who uses bricklaying skills to kill people.
It was a little.
Liked it a great deal. I wanted more of the bricklaying stuff. And he has three films from the Strangers franchise coming out later this year. And so that's a choice. Head look for Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, where tomorrow, our episode's coming out on Wednesday, so tomorrow you can hear an episode with Will Slater from Explaining Helicopter talking about the Indian shark attack film, Our Tank. I can't remember how you pronounce it. AATANK. That should be out tomorrow.
All right. Interesting. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And you can now find me on Instagram. Just look for Move Around Minute. And if you want to send me an email, that's very simple too. Just send me an email to movearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Marching home again, hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.